February was supposed to give us answers. Instead, it gave us more questions. Are the Badgers consistent enough to make a real March run? And speaking of March, I've got five things I cannot wait to find out when those first football practice reports drop. It's a Sunday night. Here we go.
Welcome to the Bucky Report, your destination for all things Wisconsin Badgers. Authentic takes.
Oh my God.
Game analysis.
Touchdown Badgers! Ring one up!
And discussion from the fan perspective.
Woohoo!
Thanks for joining us and on Wisconsin.
Welcome to the Bucky Report. I am your host, Rajiv, back together on a Sunday evening to talk about all things Wisconsin Badgers. On today's show, we're taking a hard look at Wisconsin basketball after one of the most confusing weeks of the season. We'll break down the Oregon madness and what flipped in the dominant win over Washington and whether February made you feel better or worse about this team heading into March. Then we get into the big picture, the consistency question. Do the Badgers have the makeup of a true contender, or are there just too many flaws showing up at the wrong time? We'll dive into bracketology, current seeding projections, and some potential opponents. And to close it out, spring football is almost here. I've got five things I'm most excited to learn about once practice reports start rolling in. You can find our show on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. If you like what we're doing, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button so you know when we make new content. As you can see, I'm by myself tonight. Justin is in Mexico. He is with his son and his parents. They're in Cabo and sitting on a beach, hopefully drinking Mai Tais or something. But whatever it is, he's probably having more fun than a lot of us. So, hey, but we're here to talk Badgers. So we're gonna do basketball, Oregon stuff, Washington. We're going to do definitely some bracketology stuff just to kind of, I'm going to pull up the net rankings like I did last week. We're going to talk through some of those and some key elements about the seeding that I think people aren't quite seeing, or that at least we're not talking about yet, that I think might help us. I think there's some positive things that we can glean from it. So I'm going to put up my my graphic for the night too, just to kind of show you what's going on the show today. It was one of those crazy weeks again, where it seems to happen all the time, right? We win one, we lose one. We win one, we lose one. I mean, last week it was the whole Ohio State-Iowa thing, and then this week we have an opportunity to get two West Coast wins, easier teams to beat. We beat the better of the two teams. We destroyed the better of the two teams. Washington is better than Oregon. Now, to Oregon's credit, with Biddle back, they're a different team. Like, that Biddle absolutely destroyed us in that game, which was difficult to watch. So we're going to get into that a little bit, talk about that game and kind of break down what changed with Washington. But the biggest thing for me, and we're going to talk about consistency as we go deeper into the show, it's all about the fact that this team just didn't show up. I can't understand that, honestly. I don't truly get why we have a game on the West Coast where we don't show up. Yes, it was a 11 o'clock tip off Central Time. It was 8 o'clock my time, which was great, by the way. People stayed up for our reaction show on Locked On Badgers. They probably weren't very happy. That was awful to see. The show was good, but that wasn't good. It was a brutal, brutal game to watch. And the level of sort of disinterest that we saw from some players, namely John Blackwell, who we're definitely going to talk about today. I know Ryan just did a great show about John Blackwell and everything that he's been seeing from him. But I've got my issues with Blackwell. And I know there's a good comment that I'm going to bring up that I'm going to put it up right now, actually. Badger Fanatics, as much as I love Rajiv, bad take about sitting JB. We need JB, and sitting him isn't going to help him get out of a mini funk. I'm going to address that because I hear this point and I understand that, but I'm going to address it. But ultimately, very uninspired performance. We looked like crap, basically. And there were times in that game where it was like, okay, this is going to be comfortable. And then it got more and more uncomfortable as the game went on, to the point where by the end, they dominated us. The second half, they totally killed us. And why? Like, what? Why can we not play up to our opponents? I said on the reaction show after that game that my biggest issue is on-court leadership. And this is I'm going to bring up the JB discussion here, because I think that if you have strong on-court leaders, right, that's the ability to play up to those opponents. That's the ability to get locked in and to realize, hey, like, whatever happens here, this is an important game. I don't care who we're playing. We have to get locked in. But the leader sets that tone on the court. Now, Nick Boyd, for the most part, has done that. I think Nick Boyd played all right. And like, there are times when he, even him, like he kind of tends to play down to the opponents a little bit. But if him and Blackwell both played as hard as they do in other games, when they're at Michigan or at Illinois or at Washington for that matter, home against Iowa, if there was that level of tenacity, energy, passion, we would be able to beat those teams easily. We would have beaten Oregon, no doubt, had we just shown up, got off the bus even. Now, give Oregon a ton of credit. They played their ass off. That was one of the best, honestly, it was a fantastic performance from them. They were hustling for every play. They were rebounding everything that they could. They were playing very, very aggressive defense. They weren't scared. And the announcer said it multiple times, they had nothing to lose. They had nothing to lose. And I get that. We also took 45 threes, which that's the big number that was talked about a lot, but I don't really get that bothered by it. It was just the type of threes that we took. So that's an issue there. But the Blackwell thing, here's my thing on John Blackwell. You can't convince me that he needs to play the same number of minutes that he's been getting recently. Okay. He can't be your top minute getter on the floor. Not right now. I'm not saying that pull him from the starting lineup. I'm not saying like, oh, he should play 10 minutes a game. No, that's insane. Obviously he's one of our more important players and he needs to play. But when you have two really ugly first half turnovers, really ugly, and you're not really doing anything out there on the defensive side of the floor either, take him out, Greg. Take him out of the game and let him sit there for 5 minutes and take a look at what's going on from the bench and understand that send the message to the team that if you're going to be one of the top guys on this team, if you're not going to bring it every time on the floor, then you have to take a rest. Let BC go out there and get more minutes. Let put Hayden Jones out there in moments like that. I'm fine with giving other guys an opportunity to play that aren't as good as John Blackwell. And I recognize that puts us in a state of a liability, but like you can't reward that by giving him 34 minutes in that game. Now, again, I'm fine with him starting. Okay. So the argument that Badger Fanatic brought up was, you know, he can play out of a funk if he stays in the game. And the discussion is, do we need to pull a guy that, you know, is struggling this much in his form? I don't think that matters. I don't think it matters. Like there's no reason to leave him out there just to get out of the funk. You know what can get him out of a funk? Not getting playing time. He sits on the bench and he plays 22 or 24 minutes in a game, and Braden Carrington gets more minutes, and even Kinzinger gets more minutes, Jones gets more minutes. Like that also might kickstart him and his offense a little bit, right? Like that's a really important part that I feel like doesn't really, I understand the argument of let him play through his funk. Okay, but that's also been several games now. How many times have on this show, on Locked On, have we talked about John Blackwell just not being quite there this year? Whether it's defensive intensity, whether it's offensive prowess, like his inability to drive past people, like it's just gone away all of a sudden. Like, I don't really get that. I saw a listener on Ryan's show earlier make a really good point about how he's kind of played three different positions in the last few years. Like he was more of like as a freshman year, he wasn't really kind of like a two or three. Then he had to be a point guard. And now he's just the two that plays off of Nick Boyd. I hear that, but that doesn't explain his inability to get things done in the lane, his inability to drive, pop, that fadeaway isn't dropping. Like he needs to force the issue offensively at times. And that doesn't mean just spot up threes. I don't need to see just spot up threes, right? I need to see a lot of the other stuff too, because he can do that, right? And that's an important piece of it. Badger says, let's also remember he locked up Yates and Zoom was very inefficient and he impacts the game in other ways. Yeah. Yeah. He does impact the game in other ways, but I would say that defensively, he has moments where he looks really good, but moments where I just don't really feel like it's out there. So that was the Oregon game. And of course, the same thing happens in Washington, like 7 points from Blackwell. Not a good performance, but the team played incredible. And we have to talk about that. Like Braden Carrington shot 15 threes, made 9 of them. That's fantastic. Like what an incredible performance from him. 32 points, 22 from Nick Boyd. I love Braden Carrington. You've heard me say that many times. When he got to this team and when I saw him play early on, I just felt like he looked like a more mature player. OK, Okay. And we talk about immaturity on this team a lot, like sometimes about like one of those things where the example is you're traveling to Oregon and you laid an egg against Oregon last year at the Kohl Center, same kind of thing. But that kind of thing is like, he seems to be one of the more mature players out there. Right. So I do want him to play more, but an incredible performance from him. And let me tell you something, going to Washington, that's a quad one win. We're going to talk about the bracketology of it. I'm going to show you some stuff visually so we can talk through what that looks like. But there is there's something to be said for getting that win and getting it so handily. Now, obviously, Braden Carrington had a career night. He went nuclear. He was unconscious. He was taken, you know, seemingly like 40, 45 foot three-point shots. He was just doing everything he could to shoot at the end. And that's fine. I get that. And I'm okay with it. He did what he had to do. But that's the kind of performance that I think we need to see more of. And as I've also said, I said yesterday, this like John Blackwell is on, like, what is he providing right now that Braden Carrington isn't? Like, what is he actually doing that he's brought? John Blackwell is basically has become a spot up shooter right now. Well, Braden Carrington does that, but he does it better, right? Braden Carrington's shooting 40% from 3-point line. John Blackwell takes more and is shooting 37%. I do want to make this clear. I'm not saying Blackwell needs to not play in this lineup at all. Obviously, it's super important. If we're going to be successful in March, we are going to need John Blackwell. But right now, the way he's playing, he doesn't need to be playing as many minutes. Now, if he changes things, if he gets more aggressive offensively, if he drives to the lane more and forces the issue a little bit driving, right? Not just like drive, get cut off, and then immediately look to pass the ball. Like, force the issue a little bit. You're an athletic guy. Like, go into him, right? Force it down their throat a little bit more. And if you aren't going to get to the hoop, then stop and pop. And then, or drive deeper, kick. He did that yesterday against for Nolan Winter. Nolan Winter got a wide open three, which was great to see. And I think that's the kind of thing that Blackwell has to do more of, which is that penetration. Mr. October says BC was the only Badger to shoot a free throw at Washington. How does that even happen? Yeah. Well, it happens because when you take, you know, 38 threes, I think we took yesterday. That's what happens. I mean, you're not going to force the issue. I think there were times where fouls could have been called, but that's part of that driving ability and to get fouled. Now, I do appreciate a couple of things that Nick Boyd did yesterday, which was he wasn't forcing the issue at times to get to the hoop because obviously a lot of people are blocking that left-handed layup. He stopped and popped a couple times, actually. That little floater, left-hand floater from inside the paint, that's super effective. Nick Boyd needs to do more of that. I love it. I actually love that about him. And I've wanted to see more of that from him. And I thought yesterday was one of his better performances in regards to sort of like the intelligence that he played with yesterday, right? Which I thought was great. Nolan Winter, I thought, had a good game as well. I think he had 13 points yesterday. But good performance overall. Three of five from three. He just needs to shoot more, right? I like the fact that he actually touched the post yesterday, which is great. The ball touched the post. He had like a turnaround jumper. He missed it. And then Garlock did the same thing. He also missed, but we need to see more of that. I don't want that to stop, right? I don't want that to stop at all. Like, I want to see that ball hit the post. I'm fine taking all the threes we're taking, but the more the ball hits the post or hits the paint, penetration, kick out, all those things help us get a little bit better. But overall, two really, really insanely different games. You couldn't have a more polarizing type of a week of Badger basketball. Horrible, horrible game against Oregon, and then an absolute dominant performance yesterday against a much better team, quad one victory, which is really, really great to see. KPB, Kevin Brown says, dunk the ball. Yeah, like Kevin always talks about how our bigs need to dunk a little more. And you're right. Like, I think, was it Garlock or who was it that had like a wide open shot down there? Yeah, it was Garlock and he didn't dunk it. It's fine. Look, make it. That's all I want. But that's the dunking thing is part of being more aggressive, right? It's about understanding that you're a big, you're 7 feet tall. You need to play like it a little bit more, right? Like that's a fair point. All right. So February was a month that we did a show at the end of January and we talked about the 7 games in February that were going to define this season, right? I think that was actually the show was titled Make or Break, because it was either going to be, this is going to propel us into the tournament, or it was going to take us out, or it was going to be the best season ever, or we were going to have a February slide that we've seen from this Badger team a few times, right? And we saw kind of a mixed bag, But it's interesting when you look at the results of the February schedule. We beat Illinois, Michigan State, Iowa, Washington. We lost to Indiana, Ohio State, and Oregon. If you would have told me to start the month, you are going to lose to Indiana, Ohio State, and Oregon, I would say that's going to be a one-win month. That is literally the definition of a February slide, and it would have been awful. We would have been out of the tournament. That's what you expect. What's weird is that we actually won the games we weren't supposed to win, and we lost the games we easily could have won, right? Like at Indiana, that's a tough game, but we played hard there. I mean, it was again a slow start, but it got a little bit better, and obviously the whole overtime madness, and we were up 4 points with 50 seconds left, didn't work. But then we took that, and we turned it into two massive wins at Illinois and at home against Michigan State. And then you go that here, guys, that step back again. You go to Ohio State, you just can't get it done. That's a really tough game. That one, in the end, the way we lost that game bothers me. That we lost that game doesn't bother me. Like, Ohio State on the road does nothing to hurt you. It would have been a quad one victory, so a quad one loss is fine, especially when it's on the road like that. Then we bounce back against Iowa. Great. And then we had this madness that we just talked about, this Oregon-Washington week that just makes no sense whatsoever. And it brings up the sort of the bigger question. So overall, right, 4-3 in the month, we're sitting in a very good conference record now, right? We've already got 12 wins, 12-6, two more games to go. But it brings up, it's literally a microcosm of the entire Badger season and what every Badger fan is talking about, which is consistency, right? The inconsistency of this team. You see like a great game and then a bad game and here and then. And it is a very interesting topic. The question that I have, and I want your answers in the chat, is whether this team is consistent enough to actually make a run in March. Are we a real contender? Or are we kind of a pretender that I think a lot of Badger fans, myself kind of included, feel like this team definitely could go somewhere. But a lot of people would probably say, this team's probably going to be losing in the round of 32, right? I feel like I've asked around a little bit and I've talked to some people and I've read things online and the Discord and all that stuff. And I feel like for the most part, round of 32 exit is where everyone's expecting, which by seed, that sounds like what could happen. But it does depend a lot on who we get, the draw. We're going to talk about that in our next segment. We're going to talk a lot about bracketology. I'm going to break down some stuff for you and really talk about where we want to be and what we can do. But I think this team, as much of a bailout as this is to say, we can be consistent enough to do it. Because as I've said many times, you can't argue that we can't do it if we can beat Michigan, Illinois, and Michigan State. Michigan is the best win in the nation all year in the entire state sport of college basketball. No team has a better win than we do at Michigan. That doesn't exist, right? No one has gone to Duke and won. No one's done that. Like, you're beating one of the best teams in the country. And so if you can do that, I don't think you can make an argument that this team is just not good enough to go to a Sweet 16 or an even Elite Eight. Like, they could do it. Obviously, it's going to take a lot. It's going to take a solid defensive effort. But I think this team is a contender. And someone said, a contender for what? Sweet 16. That was Will Hanna. I think, fine, we'll give you that. Like, are they a contender for an Elite Eight? No one's going to say they're a Final Four team. I get that. Again, I think that the ceiling is always there because of our ability to drop 90 points on the best team in America. So when you do that, you have that kind of a ceiling. That's ultra. I am not predicting that. There's no chance, especially with the whole Ohio State loss, the Oregon loss, those types of things. But they're not a team that I feel like is going to just go in there and get plastered in the first round of the tournament, right? I don't think they're a team that's going to go to the round of 32 and get beaten up by a three seed or a two seed, and we're going to get into who those opponents might be potentially, because I think the team has the ability to play up to opponents just as much as they do play down. Well, theoretically, you're not going to be playing down to anybody in the NCAA tournament. Maybe the first round, but with our seeding, we're not playing a bad team in the NCAA tournament. We're playing a Power Four conference, like a Texas or an Auburn or whatever. We're playing one of those schools. We're not playing like, you know, James Madison even. Obviously, we have issues there. But the consistency, I think, is on Greggard a little bit. I think that is something that, that goes into the discussion of leadership, right? And the ability to not take games off. It's on-court leaders and it's off-court leaders. It's definitely Greggard, but it's also John Blackwell, Nick Boyd. Like, those guys set the tone out there. And so I hate to say this, because, but it's true. Like, we, if we just had more energy and were more locked in like we were in the Washington game, who's to you? You can't make the argument that we can't beat anybody. We absolutely can. We can definitely do that. But the question is, will we see that? Well, every time we played a really good opponent, we have, right? Nebraska is one of the lone exceptions. They were a really good team who absolutely crushed us. Was earlier in the season, right? It was before the true sort of Big Ten slate started. But when ever since the, you know, January came by, we haven't had a huge misstep, like a team that's just like, they're just way better than us, right? Like, yeah, early in the season, Nebraska, BYU, all those teams, they were better. They beat us badly. That's not going to happen in the tournament, I don't think, right? Because now you've just got too much firepower, right? You've got Braden Carrington shooting 40%. And really, it's more like 50 plus in the last few games, or the last like set of games, right? You've got Nick Boyd, who just frankly is unconscious at times, and his ability and his speed, his athleticism to be able to get to the hoop. And then you've got the bigs that you got Nolan Winter, who we know what Nolan Winter brings and what he does. But now you've got an improving Austin Rapp, right? An Austin Rapp early in the season who we were like, ooh, did we get a bad transfer? To now, ever since that Ohio State game that we were at in Madison, turned the tables around for his whole season, right? And now he's a relied upon playmaker from the bench. He's a shooter. He can put the ball on the deck. He's cutting to the basket more. He's playing better defense. He's rebounding. So when you look at the team that lost those big games bad early in the year to a team now that is actually beating these teams, and the teams we're losing to, they're not necessarily better than us. We're just not playing up to that level. I do not think it's an issue of, well, we're just not good enough to do that. It's just that we're not playing hard enough and we're not bringing that, the mental fortitude potentially. And listen, and let me know if you think I'm wrong about this. If you feel like, no, this team is, it's bullshit. They're not good enough to do this. But I feel like they are. Like, if, so if we played Villanova again right now, if we played BYU again right now, played Nebraska again, I'm not saying we win those games. I think we win one or two of them. I think we beat Villanova, right? I think the Nebraska game would be very, very difficult and we would still lose at Nebraska, but I think it's a much closer game. BYU, well, now BYU doesn't have Richie Saunders, but which is bad for him. But yeah, I mean, I feel like we have the ability to actually do that now and we're a different team than we were. So I am still kind of buying this a little bit. I'm buying the fact that we're still a contender. We can still make noise. And I don't think there's a single team that wants to see us in March because of the fact that we're going to shoot 43s. And if we make near 20 of them, sorry, you're not beating us, right? You're not beating us. And yeah, I mean, Ryan says you'll likely see teams lock in on scouting reports much more in March for sure. The Boyd left hand Carrington three stuff is going to be harder and scouted more. Very good point. Obviously, Ryan knows ball better than most of us. Definitely better than me. Yeah. I mean, it is going to be harder, right? For sure. And the tournament basketball is very different, right? Like, fouls are called so fast, and you have to be very careful not to let yourself get in foul trouble, because your season ends if you get a couple early fouls from Nick Boyd or something because they're calling it tight, or an offensive foul on John Blackwell that we've seen way too many times, right? If that happens in the tournament and all of a sudden he's got to sit, like, everything can change very rapidly. So you have to be very careful in the tournament. And it does. Tournament basketball is different. And it's not going to be easy. And yes, the scouting report on Nick Boyd is going to be out there, right? Everyone, the scouting report's already out there. I mean, everybody knows to shut down that left hand, which is why the adjustments that I thought he made, which was popping, right? Stopping and popping in the lane, shooting that floater all day. Because he's too quick not to get that, right? Everyone is so determined to stop him on the left, to stop his left hand, that he's going to get those mid-range, you know, mid-range in little floaters and jumpers, which are going to be important for him. I also will continue to say, can we please see some more true pick and roll? And what I mean by true pick and roll is an actual screen, not just rejecting it or rejecting it, it's still a role. You've got to have a hard roll to the basket. You notice every time we actually do that, we actually have a hard roll to the basket. I think BC and Winter did it this game. Huh, just wide open layup, right? We've seen that before. You can't do it all the time because teams are going to adjust against it. That would be a nice adjustment to make in March. How about more pick and roll? A better two-man game, right? And that starts with Nick Boyd, a little bit of Braden Carrington. You saw a two-man game develop a little bit with Blackwell and Winter, which normally that's a good two-man game. But Blackwell's sort of lack of speed and inability to really become a driving threat takes that away a little bit, right? You want Nick Boyd running that because you've got to switch. If it's a true screen and he's going to take that screen, he's not going to reject it. You got to switch because otherwise he's going to blow right by you, right? And screen him so he goes left, right? They're going to protect against that left. And then you've got a hard roll to the basket and you take that. Or it's a drive and pop, right? Drive and dish out to the corner where Blackwell's hanging out there or BC's hanging out there, right? Like, I feel like that's really critical. But I really do think this team can be more consistent. Maybe that's just wishful thinking. I mean, hello, like you're talking to me. I'm always about finding things to be positive about and staying like feeling that believe that we can actually get it done. But again, you can't beat the teams that we beat if we don't have the ability to play like that, right? The Illinois, Michigan State consistency is there. Can we do it? Yes. Will we do it? I don't know. That's the million-dollar question. Nobody actually knows if we're going to do it. I'm curious if you guys think that we are. Like, I want everyone's, like, and put if you listen to the show later, put in the comments. I want your actual prediction right now about where we exit the tournament, right? Like, I do think that we're a Sweet 16 team. I think we could definitely have a round of 32 exit. That's probably the most likely, and we're going to get into that in our next segment. I'm going to break down some of the bracket stuff. But, I mean, it's definitely possible. Beyond that, unlikely, right? Unlikely. So by the way, speaking of bracketology, on Selection Sunday, like we've done for the past few years, we will do a Selection Sunday special here on the Bucky Report. Obviously, we always do our shows on Sunday anyway, so we'll be doing that. We'll break down the whole bracket. We're going to get some other people on. I think Nick Ghost will join us, probably Ryan will join us. Obviously, Justin will be back next week from his trip. So yeah, it'll be a lot of fun to kind of break down that a little bit and talk about, everything about that bracket. I love Selection Sunday. It's one of my favorite days of the year. And it's nice to just kind of break it all down and talk about it. But I do want to talk about bracketology a little bit now. And then we're going to get into football at the end of the show. We're going to talk about five things that I'm very, very excited to get those first reports out. So I want you to be thinking about that before we get to that segment. Those first spring football reports come out. What are the things you are desperate to know right away? Those are the questions that you want answered immediately. That's what I want you to think about. So let's talk bracketology. Right now, as of now, ESPN, DeCourcy, Lenardi, all these guys, generally speaking, they've got us on the 7 line. That's the most common thing between like CBS Sports and Field of 68. Whenever you look, it's about a 7. Mike DeCourcy, I think, has us as an 8 after he dropped us after the loss to Oregon. Joe Lenardi did not drop us after that loss to Oregon. And so I think right now, I think we are squarely on that 7 line. And that kind of puts that ceiling of maybe you can get to 6. You're not going to get to 5, although I think there's a little bit of a chance maybe if you got to beat Purdue, though, to make that happen. But so the thing you have to do is beat Maryland, right? You got to beat Maryland. And then if you beat Maryland, it's you get a free hit against Purdue. No one's expecting you to win that game, and that's okay, right? You lose to Purdue, fine. However, as I just stated before about the Nebraska game and some of those early season woes that we had, that's a perfect kind of litmus test for us. Like, what do we do against Purdue? Are we going to lose by 30? Like, I thought we were going to get crushed at Illinois. We didn't. We won. Not saying we're going to beat Purdue, but we certainly can. And wouldn't that be a feather in the cap of this team and that resume if that were to happen? I'm going to put up the net rankings. We're going to start here with this as we did this last week as well, just to kind of take a look. This is just the Big Ten teams that are currently the current net rankings. These are updated daily, by the way. So this is official today. Unlike a lot of the bracketology folks that only update it weekly or biweekly. So obviously the teams at the top, you know, no surprise, Michigan, Illinois, Purdue, Michigan State, so on and so forth. Wisconsin's 32 in the net, 6 quad one victories. I will point out that as of right now, there are only 16 teams in the country, 16 teams in the country that have more quad one victories than the Badgers. Think about that for a second. Quad one victories mean everything. And that's why that Washington win yesterday was so critical. Washington 62nd in the net rankings. If you beat a team on the road, if they are in the top 75, that counts as a quad one victory. At home, it's top 30. So that's why Iowa still counts for us. And you want Iowa to keep winning, right? We don't want Iowa dropping in the rankings a little bit here, because if they fall below 30, now we lose a quad one victory. Same kind of goes for Minnesota. They're 69th in quad in the net rankings. We want them to keep winning. Now Minnesota just beat Iowa. But if Minnesota, if they fall below 75, then we get knocked out. We did beat Northwestern, but that was a home game, so that doesn't really help us. And of course, you know, we had opportunities, right? Certainly Indiana, 38th, that would have been a big opportunity for us. Ohio State, so we did lose, but we're 6-7 in quad one victory. So I always think this is interesting to look at, because it kind of gives you a sense of, when you look at, all right, 32, that does that put you on the 8 line, right? Is that kind of where the net rankings go? But then you have to dive into it a little bit more. And the fact that we have the most, that we have 6 quad one victories, only 16 teams have more than that, and you have the best win in the country against Michigan, you have arguably the second or third or fourth best win in beating and winning at Illinois. That is the interesting thing, right? That's the difference of whether you are going to stay where your net ranking kind of puts you, or you're going to climb up from that, right? Because if you don't have that Michigan win and you don't have that Illinois win, obviously you have less quad wins victories. Now you're squarely an 8-9 seed. That's huge for us, right? I mean, that's massive. Dominic says, I'd be interested to see if Ohio State could be a quad one win from a game in Madison, being that they beat Purdue today. That's a really good point. That's going to come up tomorrow with that. All the updated stuff from today's win is going to come out tomorrow. So Ohio State is 37th. So yeah, listen, if Ohio State cracks the top 30, that would be another quad one victory for us. That's great. Really, really good point there. And that is going to help. Obviously their ranking is going to go way up from that one. So that's important. But when you look at where we are right now, so I'm going to look at CBS Sports and ESPN's bracket. We're a 7 seed. I thought it'd be interesting to talk about who some of these opponents are, right? Like, what does our road actually look like? So right now, CBS Sports has us playing 10 seed St. Louis. But let me talk through some of the other people that are near that line. It's we're not talking about mid-majors here. We're talking about Missouri. We're talking about SMU. We're talking about Texas, Texas A&M, Auburn. Those are all the teams. Every team, when you look at, they're bubble teams, right? Because if you're getting the 11 is usually a play-in game. That's the sort of like last four in, right? Those are going on the 11 line. If you are a power four team, obviously you're mid-major, you win your conference, you're in, but you might be playing in the 16 play-in game. But this 11 seed, excuse me, is where we're going to get those. So you're talking about bubble teams. Teams that maybe would not have had the best year, but to get in the tournament, they have some quad one victories. They've done something well. And oftentimes they're playing well right now because the committee cares about how you're playing at the end of the season, right? So a lot of these teams that work their way into the tournament are actually playing really well right now. So this is not going to be an easy opponent at all for the Badgers if they actually get that 7 line. On ESPN, some of those 10s are, again, Texas A&M, Missouri, and then Texas and SMU, right? So those are the teams that are on there. If the 11 line, right, that's where you get those play-in games. So right now in Santa Clara, IU, we're not going to get a Big Ten team, obviously, in the first round. San Diego State is an 11 seed that's listed right now. Miami of Ohio, Auburn, TCU. So you have a little bit of an advantage playing at the 6, but where it really comes into play is, of course, to go to the Sweet 16. You don't want to play the number 2 seed. Sorry. Listen to, like, look, the 2 seeds right now are not anybody that we want to play. Purdue, Houston, Illinois, Florida. Again, we're not going to get a Big Ten team likely there, but Florida and Houston. Houston's going to wax us. Okay, we're not beating Houston to go to the Sweet 16. That's why that Oregon loss matters, even though it didn't really hurt us, right? It didn't actually drop our net ranking, But having that loss as a quad two loss, it's just that it's that one little thing that people can say, ooh, are they going to move up to that sixth line or not, right? Do we have to beat Purdue to get to the sixth? I don't think so because of what I said about the quad one victories. The fact that we are 17th in the country, basically, for the number of quad one wins. That's going to help us. And I think it bumps us up a little bit, right? This is all just bracketology stuff, and I like this kind of stuff. But ultimately, the committee in historically has shown that big wins, i.e. Michigan, Illinois, and quad one victories mean so much more than anything else. So I do think there's a chance we get up to the sixth line. That obviously benefits us quite a bit because we play that 11, and then we get the three to get to the Sweet 16, right? So the three seeds right now are going to CBS, Alabama, Michigan State, Iowa State, Nebraska. Again, not going to play the Big Ten. Iowa State would be a very difficult out. Like, there are a lot of good teams in college basketball. The higher we can drive this seed up, the better off we're going to be in this tournament. That's obvious. But I think that it's oftentimes, even as a six or seven, you're comfortable. You're like, oh, okay, this Sweet 16 looks all right. But you've got really difficult games. You've got two very hard games. So can the Badgers win two hard games in a row? I think the answer is yes. We've done it. We've proven it, right? Illinois, Michigan State. We've done it time and time again where we have these stretches where we jolt up, right? We kick it up a notch and we get those two big victories, which I absolutely expect that we can get. So it's interesting to see how this makeup is and who the opponents are that we could get. Again, this is going to change a lot, but I just wanted to give a flavor of like who our likely opponents are. Texas, a matchup against Texas, I think could absolutely happen, right? Big time SEC school, A&M even is out there, Auburn, like these are going to be difficult games. Again, it's how are they playing right now? If you get a hot team that to work their way onto that 10 line or the 11 line to make into the tournament, they had to finish strong, right? Maybe they won a few games in their conference tournament. Maybe they had a big win against the top team in their conference. That's going to be the team we play. It is not we should beat them easily, right? Dominic says, Rajiv, could that go the other way where the committee wants to make competitive games and a Wisconsin versus number two seed would be extremely competitive, so they place us at the seventh seed because of that? It's a really good question, a really good point. I think the committee does do some of this. Like there is some matchup, not protecting, but they're trying to look for big money matchups and things like that. But the problem is, like, if they really believe that Wisconsin is worthy of a sixth seed, putting us on the seven line is a huge disadvantage just because you have to play the two, right? Yes, it's a big matchup, but the thing is you're getting big matchups even if you're on the sixth line. Because like we've been on the sixth line before where we had to play, was it Pittsburgh, I think, when they were the three? And, we obviously were the three last year, had to play the six at BYU. That didn't work out so well. So you're going to have good matchups on the six, seven line no matter what. You cannot drop to the eight. That's suicide. Because you've got a really, really hard first round game, and then you're playing a number one seed, which, come on, like, that's not happening. Sure, it happened in Ann Arbor, but Duke absolutely will wax us. And I just don't want that. Like, I mean, I'm not saying we couldn't win that game, but you don't want the eight, right? We've done it before. Went to a Final Four as an eight seed in 1999. And we obviously, had our famous win over Villanova when we were an eight and they were a one. But it's not what you want to see. That'd be awful. I think there is a real legitimate shot that we get a six based on the fact that the quad one victories, based on the fact that we have the best wins. That's why people are projecting us at seven. I think you beat Maryland. You have to beat Maryland. You lose to Maryland at home. That's a bad loss. That's not just a quad two. That's like, that could be in the quad three. I don't know the definitions of quad three, even because it's so far down there. That's not good. Because it's a home game and they're one of the worst teams in the conference. So you can't lose that game. You have to play up a little bit. Test of a leadership, right? Test of whether or not Blackwell, Boyd, Greg Gard can get these guys actually ready to play and force the issue a little bit. And then you go to Purdue. You win that game. Boom. You're a six. Guaranteed, in my opinion. You might even sneak to the five, but you're going to have to do something in the Big Ten tournament early. Right, you got to get a win, maybe get a knock off another big team somehow. I don't think a lot of seeds matter from the Big Ten tournament. That's not exactly they don't do that often. They kind of preset those things for the most part. So I don't love that. But you could definitely have make a case for the five, but we are a six if we beat Purdue. So that's a huge game for us. I think right now we're a seven if status quo. Status quo meaning we beat Maryland, we lose to Purdue, we're going to get the double bye in the Big Ten tournament now. So we're probably going to face like we could face like a Minnesota potentially, who, by the way, they're playing really well right now. There's teams like that that we can play. You lose to those teams. You lose the first game you play in the conference tournament, which you're not playing a top four team, right? Because those guys are all, they got triple byes. So you're playing, you're one of the better seeds in that third round, if you will. So you're going to be playing a lower seeded team. If you lose that, that's when you run the risk of maybe falling down to potentially an eight. That would be bad. I don't like the Big Ten tournament, but it is important to win a game, right? Doesn't have to be a great win, but you got to get one to kind of, in my opinion, what that does is it puts the committee like, all right, wherever we sort of have them slotted right now, but we're going to leave them there, right? We're going to leave them there. Regardless of what happens beyond that, they're probably not going to elevate or drop. But if you lose the game in the first game of the Big Ten tournament against, let's say Minnesota, for example, or like a Penn State or a, you know, Maryland, Rutgers, one of those teams, then that's going to be difficult, right? That does factor into the quads, right? Neutral site. So for example, quad one victory, a neutral site is in the top 50 team. So if you beat a team in the top 50 in net on a neutral site, that's a quad one victory. So the same things play for you. But I think the closer you get to the end of these tournaments, the less it actually matters. The first game though, that matters. That really, really matters. So very interesting. I love this kind of stuff. I love bracketology and just talking about it a little bit more. And obviously, we're going to talk about a lot over the next couple of weeks, depending on how things happen. Selection Sunday is coming 2 weeks away, which is awesome. I mean, it's so good. The fact that we only have two games left on the conference, by the way, is nuts. Like, this, where did the season go? Where did the season go? By the way, I always talk about, the Big Ten regular season conference championship meaning way, way more than the tournament, and one of my favorite things. So congrats to Michigan. They only have one loss in the conference, and yep, that's us. That's us. That's incredible. But yeah, I mean, the fact that they're probably going to finish the season with one loss in conference is incredible. Like, this league is very, very difficult. And to do what they've done is remarkable. So congrats to Michigan and their fans and all that stuff. You know, I wish it was us, but not going to happen. Not going to happen. So curious as to your thoughts on seeding. Curious as to your thoughts on where you think the Badgers exit the tournament. And do you kind of feel like we're a team that maybe could potentially go on a run? I do think we're a contender for a deep run. That doesn't mean Final Four. That means, like, to me, a deep run is like Elite Eight. That's a deep run. Sweet 16 is a benchmark that Badger fans are dying to get to. We definitely can do that. Will we? I don't know. Are we a candidate to go deeper? Yes, we are, because the consistency is there. If you have slightly better leadership between the guys on the court. And frankly, if they just lock in, I know that's simplistic to say, but that's what it's about. Like, are they going to be able to actually lock in? That's the real question. Dominic says double bye is very doable considering MSU still has to play Michigan and we get to control our own destiny against Purdue. So we do have an opportunity to get the triple bye. The triple bye is a top four. That'd be great. We have locked into a double bye in the Big Ten tournament, but triple bye is that next rung up. That's going to be difficult. Obviously, yeah, if we can find a way to beat Purdue, that's going to give us a lot better chance, which is great. Mr. October says Wisconsin at net 32 gives Michigan a quad two loss too. Yeah, I mean that's very true. They did do that. All right, let's talk about football a little bit to close the show today. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for putting up with just my voice today. Justin, this is my first time I've done a live show, by the way, by myself. Kind of weird, but I like it. It's always fun to talk to all of you. And if you listen to this later, again, thank you so much. Hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. If you're not already subscribed, really appreciate all the support of the show. Spring practice is under 3 weeks away. So the week after Selection Sunday, that's when spring practice is beginning. And it's going to go through... I have the schedule somewhere. I don't have it in front of me, but I believe April 25th is the spring game. The open practice, I should say. I feel like that's going to happen there. So I wanted to just kind of quickly touch on, I'm very curious everyone's thoughts on this as well. Drop it in the comments if you're not listening to this live. one of my favorite things after spring football starts, right? And we all do it, right? We're waiting for any kind of reports to come out, right? So I'm texting Osen. I'm like, what are you seeing, right? If Ryan's down there, I'm going to text him. I know that they'll be going to some of that stuff. You're looking for any like granular piece of information coming from people that are actually at spring practice or leaks that have come out from the team or people that maybe we're talking to or whatever, like things about what's going on at practice. So what are you most excited to know about? When that moment comes and that the news drops and here comes Osen's first write-up, right, about spring practice, what are you looking out for? And that's the thing for me. So first off, my number one on this list, it's an obvious one, and it's O-line alignment and depth chart. Because I feel like across the team, you can look at the depth chart and you can kind of sort of figure out where things are going to be. There's a couple of positions which we're going to talk about, but that to me is number one. I need to understand what happened last year is not going to happen again with the whole Davis Hines debacle, right? I need to understand is Kaywood starting at left tackle? Is Simmons starting at right tackle? Is Mandel starting at right tackle? Who's playing guard? Is obviously Kwecki starting at center? I feel like that's the one sort of like, not lock on that we have. So, and then the depth, right? I'm very curious about the class, the 25 class there. So are we going to see Roski in that depth chart? Are we going to see Powell? Are we going to see Watts? Like those guys that are now going to be redshirt freshmen, who sees the field first and who lines up in that depth chart? So that's the first thing I'm really looking for is O-line alignment and depth chart. It can't be worse than it was last year. The O-line was a debacle. Wisconsin does not have bad offensive lines. And we can't if we're going to be successful. And if Luke Fickell's going to stay our coach, for God's sakes, you got to get an offensive line. Plus, you got a new coach there, right? Mateos, what's that look like, right? What are his thoughts of everybody, right? One of the people that we talk about right now is Kevin Haywood starting at left tackle. But is that going to happen? Is there a chance that Simmons is starting at left tackle and Mandel's at right? Like, who knows? I expect Haywood to start. I want him to start, but that's going to be really interesting to see like what's going on in spring. You know, they've been working on these guys for a while. They're sitting in the weight room, but actually getting in pads, getting on the field and figuring out who's there to play and who's going to kind of show up. Obviously with the O-line, you also have to talk about injuries. Let's hope that doesn't happen again, but are we deep enough to withstand a Kevin Haywood type injury? It's not going to help. Hopefully not him again, but we weren't last year. We could not withstand that. So that's number one for me. Number two, going to the quarterback, specifically for me, it's Colton Joseph's leadership. I want to hear about his command of the team. I want to know what he's doing with the ball, but I want to understand how he takes to this team. We kind of saw good signs last year from Billy Edwards as far as his leadership. And of course that didn't pan out. But there was a lot of good signs about that. And I'm very curious to see what happens with Colton Joseph's leadership. Is he a guy that is vocal? Is he going to be holding people accountable? We talked about leadership on the court in basketball and how important that is. The same thing applies to every sport. And it starts and ends with the quarterback in football, right? So is he going to be that vocal leader that's going to hold guys accountable and actually make that happen? That is very, very interesting. Dominic says, are we going to know how good Colton is right away? Or is it going to be the same chatter that Billy and Van Dyke had the entire offseason? Yeah, good point. We're not going to know, but we're just going to be, I'm going to be hanging on every single line that comes out. But yeah, I mean, I think we'll have a pretty good sense of what he can do. And that's, I'm going to get to one of my other ones at number five here, but yeah, I mean, it's really going to come down to that Notre Dame game and what we see out of him, but leadership specifically from Colton Joseph. looking at a couple comments here. Okay. Number three for me is the running game, specifically run stopping ability in practice. I have made no secret about the fact that I'm very concerned about our run defense. This is concerning to me. I think Ben Barton might be a much more important loss than anyone is talking about. I've certainly mentioned it. Justin and I've talked about it. Ryan's talked about it. I'm very concerned about our ability to stop the run. And I'm not saying we're not going to be okay, but we need to be really, really effective like we were last year. We did it last year, right? We had those guys up there. But is Perkins going to bring it this year? Is Dylan Johnson going to take a step? Are we going to see some of the transfers? Like, are we going to, whether it's, you know, Danitz and these kind of guys, like, I don't know what's going to happen here, but I am concerned about it. And we're going to learn a lot from that in spring practice too. How effective is our running game against the first team defense, right? Is Abu Samah just running all over the place? Is the offensive line able to block? Is the offensive line should be better, right? That we know that. So then how does our defensive line actually stand up against our own offensive line? And can we stop the run? I want to hear that it's difficult for Abu Samah to get yards in spring, right? I don't love that for the offensive line, but we cannot do anything that we expect. We cannot be a team that gets to 7 wins next year if we can't stop the run. I mean, it is something that I feel like is a little bit underrated going into this year about our team. Our defense was so good at times last year, and we were so focused on the fact that we had a horrible O-line and or a horrible O-line season because of injuries and stuff and transfers and positions. And then we never had a healthy quarterback. Like, that's the storyline of last season. But how good the defense was talked about a lot, but can that actually be replicated? Are we just expecting the defense to be as good as it was last year? And then what if it's not, right? So now we've got our offense better, right? We have a quarterback that's hopefully stays healthy, but are we going to actually be able to do anything on the defensive side? Can we be that effective run-stopping team? I'm very curious to hear about that in practice as well. Number four for me is the cornerback competition. We got a lot of cornerbacks in the transfer portal. Clearly a position of need, clearly a position of a positional focus from this staff. So who are the starters? What does that actually look like, right? Javon Robinson, probably penciling him in there. Is West going to be a part of it? Who's going to be at the slot? Like, what is that competition like? Do we see younger guys get in there? And is that going to be a strength for us? It wasn't last year, right? I mean, we've talked a lot about, you know, the career arc of Ricardo Hallman and, of course, the Nijer Forkren inexplicably unable to play last year when other players seemingly can do it. So that's a big storyline for me, right? The competition that we're going to see there. And then, is that a strength? Are we going to post-spring when Justin and I and we're unlocked on and we're talking to Ryan and we talk about kind of our post-spring storylines and, you know, like our confidence sort of meter, right? We did that. We've done that a little bit going into spring. Are we going to come out of spring being like, yeah, dude, this cornerback room is going to be great. Like we're not worried about the secondary, right? We're not worried about maybe Marvin Burks at safety and these guys, like we're going to be solid there. Or are we concerned because are we seeing that clear competition? And iron sharpens iron. I want the room to be filled with guys who can play starting cornerback. And we've got a lot of guys in the room. So the question is, how does that translate? Last up for me is, what is Jeff Grimes cooking? Jeff Grimes, much maligned. You know, everyone has their opinions on whether Jeff Grimes should have stayed or whether he should have been someone that went. I was perfectly content with him staying because I don't think we had an opportunity to see what Jeff Grimes actually could produce because he never had a quarterback. What does his offense actually look like? And more importantly, like, does it look like there's more wrinkles? Are we, you know, I really want the field to be stretched a little bit more. Like, obviously we talk all about the mesh and the tight ends and the slot receivers. Are we taking more deep shots even in practice? Are we looking to really stretch this field? Can we do that, right? Can Domingo and, you know, Coleman and some of these guys that we brought in to play wide receiver, how does that actually look with Jeff Grimes, right? That's a very important storyline for me. And it's one of those things I'm going to be looking at right away. As soon as I get reports, I want to see what kind of plays are we running? How much have we stretched this defense? The defense, can Colton Joseph throw those deep balls, which we know that he can? And do we have the receivers that can actually do it? What is he cooking, right? Jeff Grimes, it's a prove-it year for him, right? Like, yes, the quarterback situation did not help him, obviously, and that's not really fair to judge him. But there were also some really questionable play calls throughout the season. And that's where you get a lot of people questioning whether Jeff Grimes should really be a part of this offensive coaching staff. And I think it's a prove it year for him to say, all right, like, what are we going to do, right? How effective can he be at using Colton Joseph and the weapons that we don't really know about yet? We don't really know if we have a good wide receiving room. We don't really know about our tight end group, right? I mean, is Grant Steck going to take a big step or that kind of thing? So I feel like we may be all right. And we know we spent money, right? That those figures have kind of come, not total figures, but that stories have come out about how we did actually kind of spend in that upper echelon of the conference from a transfer portal perspective. Does that translate to on-field talent? Ryan Reed says, I think we found some diamonds in the receiver room this year, especially with the healthy threat at quarterback. Yeah, I mean, I hope so too, man. Like that, if we did, can Jeff Grimes make it an effective unit? Like, is he going to turn this offense into something that's actually going to be a force to be reckoned with? And how will he use Colt Joseph's legs, right? I mean, that's a huge threat. I think that threat's going to be there, however it's going to happen, that's a huge issue. I mean, it's not an issue, it's a threat. But can we actually stretch the field with our wide receivers? And can he design a system that gets the most out of these players, which did not happen last year, did not happen with Phil Longo, has not happened at all under Coach Fickell, right? I'm desperate to see an offense that looks coherent. I think every single Badger fan out there is expecting to see an offense that can be mildly coherent, which would be great. We'll close it there. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching, everybody. Justin will be back next week. Also, I wanted to add that I meant to say this at the top of the show. Rajiv's Corner is coming back this week. Go check that out. Audio platform only for now. I might move it to YouTube, but for now, wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever, that drops middle of the week. Hasn't been done the last couple of weeks, but it's going to come back this week, especially with the tournament approaching. We're going to talk about that. I talk a lot about Big Ten, like the Big Ten playoff models that have been coming out and kind of how that looks for football. So that's going to be one of my focuses for this week as well. But we'll be back again next week with Justin on Sunday, of course, to talk about the last week of college basketball, right? Maryland Purdue game, both happening before our next show. And then we're going to be talking about the Big Ten tournament and, of course, more seeding stuff as we approach one of the best times of the year, right? The NCAA tournament is one of the best times of the year. It's going to be fantastic. Thanks for joining us. And as always, on Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Bucky Report or The Bucky Report Podcast from wherever you get your content. Until next time, on Wisconsin.